Jim Shoemaker, Jason Harrington, Scott Jordan, and Jacob Norman are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., securities dealer, member FINRA SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money, it's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Whether you're a baby boomer or a millennial, it doesn't seem to matter. A common concern is always money. Well, welcome to today's program. We are going to provide a lot of information that we think is important. We're going to answer your questions. We got great guests lined up. We're always privileged to have this guest, Rusty Leonard with Stewardship Partners. He is going to talk to us about an update on the economy, and Scott Jordan is going to follow up and answer a couple of more questions that you've sent in. Also, in the second half of the program, Jason Harrington is going to guide us through how we need to stay financially fit, and Jacob Norman is going to discuss an important discussion question, long-term care, and why it should be a part of your long-term financial strategy. So you don't want to miss any part of this program. So let us get started right off the bat. Rusty Leonard, he is a CFA, founder and CEO of Stewardship Partners Investment Council. Rusty, welcome to the program, sir.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Well, Rusty, I tell you, there's so many things I want to cover today. And, you know, the first quarter is kind of in the history books. But it turned out to be somewhat a good quarter in some areas. I mean, stocks did okay. Cryptocurrency seems to bounce back a little bit. What do you think about the future? Where are we headed? What's going on? What do you see?
Well, let me first start off by kind of seconding what you said at the outset. I've often thought that what we've got right now is kind of like the movie that won the Academy Award. Not that I know anything about the movie, but it was called, I just know its title. And its title was Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
I got it.
That's what it feels like, right?
That's
Everything,
it.
Everywhere, All at Once. It's happening. So much stuff is going on. It's unbelievable. So anyway, in terms of the first quarter, yeah, you mentioned that cryptocurrencies and stocks had a pretty good quarter. NASDAQ, the NASDAQ 100, flew through the moon. But when you look a little deeper into that, you find out that 92% of the gains or something like that were made up of like eight stocks.
Right, yeah.
And everything else was up less than everything else. Like if you look at the S&P 500, you know, 492 stocks were up 1.26%. But if you had left your money in a money market fund or a T-bill or something, you would have been up 1.29%. It was really just eight stocks that drove the whole thing. So that's the kind of the definition of what we call bad breath in the market. Bad breath. There's a D in there. It's not breath. It's bread.
Bread. Got it.
But anyway, you get the idea.
It would go both ways. Well, I could have gone both ways with that. But that's good. I got it.
So, all right. So it's but it's a situation where it's an unhealthy market advance. And of course, when you step back and look at the economics, you know they're all trending in a negative way. We had the banking crisis and. That's going to cause some credit constriction, at least at the lower end of the business scale. And, you know, I could point to a never-ending list of charts that would indicate that we're on the cusp of a recession if we're not already in one. There are other charts that you can look at and would say, no, not quite yet. But the trend is kind of overwhelming in the direction of a recession of some sort sometime soon. And even the Fed admitted that in their last minutes that they released. The Fed, you know, the geniuses they have working behind closed doors there on the economics have said they expect a recession in the second half of the year.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah, they've kind of named it though as a mild recession.
Yeah, I think we could very well be due for another one. Today, Morgan Stanley reported their results, and they took a big write-off for commercial real estate loans, and that's going to be the next big thing that likely hits corporations, particularly the banking sector, and many of those loans are in the smaller part of the banking sector. So we could see a lot more bank fragility going forward.
Well, when you talk about it, I really wanted to ask you about the commercial real estate market. I mean, because we kind of went through this quick recovery of the kind of the banking crisis, which you mentioned, but real estate has got a lot of people worried. Should we be worried about this? I mean, you kind of mentioned that.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. Commercial real estate in particular, mainly large office buildings. It's one of the between the economy, you know, starting to slow down, and the fact that office workers really aren't going back to work at the office. As leases come up, companies are, you know, letting those leases go. They're not renewing them. And so we're now looking at pretty high vacancy rates. In San Francisco, for instance, the vacancy rate is close to 30% at this point in time. And so you can't make money. The people who own those buildings and took loans to own them no longer can service the loans, and they're walking away from those buildings. And so there's a lot of stress building in that segment. And there's literally trillions of dollars of commercial real estate loans out there. And, you know, some significant portion of those will end up, you know, failing, and those banks will have to eat that. It's not just banks, it's pension funds. In addition to Morgan Stanley, the California State Retirement System has also acknowledged that they're going to have some big losses in their commercial real estate portfolio. So pension plans are going to get hit in the head too. And the pension plans got their own problems. Somewhere along the way, we talked about a banking crisis. Somewhere we're going to have a pensions crisis. And that's another story for another day, but something to keep in the back of your mind.
If you just tuned in, my guest is Rusty Leonard, founder and CEO of Stewardship Partners Investment Council, a frequent guest, always does a great job. We're talking about the economy, kind of an update of what's going on. And, you know, when you talk about commercial real estate, that's got to be something we worry about. But what about the words credit crunch when you think about that? I mean, there's implications when we hear the word credit crunch. Mentioned it. You've mentioned it. What does it mean to the financial markets? What does it mean to the economy? Yet at the same time, I guess, Rusty, I want to kind of tie this other thought to you. Big banks have been, they're announcing positive earnings this week. And it seemed like, is there really a problem when I say credit crunch tied to real estate? It's kind of like, as we talked earlier, a mixed bag.
Yes. It depends on who you're banking with, right? So if you look at the survey, there's a small business association that does a regular survey, and the survey question is credit hard or easy to get right now? And so they have a long track record of information. And of course, it's hard to get right now for small businesses. And they're struggling to find the credit. And so they employ, a lot of people. And we've had a very strong labor market for a very long period of time. We've seen that turn already. And that's another warning sign of an impending recession. But I think you're probably going to see that turn quicken. And you're going to see a lot of layoffs around the country, particularly among smaller businesses where they just can't get the money they need from the banks that they work with. Now, if you're working with J.P. Morgan and Bank of America, you're all right. They're in good shape. They have record earnings, and they're feeling great. But the smaller banks are really suffering. For instance, I know somebody who has a leasing business that is very successful, and it was acquired by a small bank. And the reason that it was acquired by the small bank was so that it could access the capital from the small bank to increase their business, which they did. And they made up 30-40% of the bank's earnings, of the small bank's earnings. Well, as of today, the bank is turning off the flow of funds to this very successful leasing company because they don't have the capital to support the loan growth. So that is a definition of a very successful leasing company making a lot of money for the bank, all of a sudden not allowed to make any more loans because of the credit crisis, the credit crunch. The bank simply doesn't have the capital to support a bigger loan book.
Those are things I think we as investors have to take into consideration, and yet at the same time not get too caught up in it and not make dramatic changes. If we have a long-term plan, we work through this long-term plan by staying the course. But if we're working on day-to-day, sometimes it's very difficult with what you're saying to us. Let me ask this question, I guess. It's such an important question because I feel like that, we hear it today. It's becoming a the debt ceiling and the whole problem with what's that doing to the dollar? Do you see that this dollar losing its reserve currency status, is that really something we should be concerned about? I mean, I look at the dollar as being by far the most generally accepted currency in the world. And yet news media is saying we should be concerned because the reserve currency status could be dropped from the dollar. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's not happening anytime soon. But there are lots of headlines out there with China, orchestrating a global effort to diminish the U.S. dollar as the world's currency. And on the margin, they'll have an impact. They'll reduce, the trade in U.S. dollars to some degree. But what's going to replace it? Is the Chinese currency going to replace it? Chinese currency makes up 4% or something like that of global reserves. The U.S. dollar makes up 59% of global central bank reserves. It's not even close. It'll be years years and years and years and years. And furthermore, the Chinese currency is a controlled currency. It's not open. You have to have an open currency like that of the U.S. where anybody can trade at any time. But in China, because they're fearful that if they made their currency freely tradable, they're fearful that all their people would rush into U.S. dollars. So they don't let you do it.
Yeah.
So all these headlines are kind of ridiculous. I understand where they're coming from because China is making this effort, you know, starting a decade or multi-decade effort to try to undermine the U.S. dollar. But it's going to be a long time before King Dollar is dethroned, and people really shouldn't worry about that. And I'd like to point out that it's a common theme among some in conservative circles that the dollar is, you know, falling and it's worthless and all that kind of stuff. None of that is actually true. It's a good talking point. There are some headlines to support those talking points right now, but the relative strength of those headlines is minimal, and it's not going to, nothing's going to be changing on that.
Well, front. I was looking
US,
at some
US
recent
dollar is going to be the currency choice.
Yeah, I was looking at some recent dollars. I mean, recent numbers and some thoughts about it. Speculators are betting that this U.S. dollar is kind of poised to make a comeback. I mean, hedge funds are really beginning to move into the dollar. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of that mindset. Let me ask you about the war in Ukraine. I mean, it's over a year old now and little change. And you know, the initiative seems to be, it's kind of back and forth. And what's your take and how does that affect us as investors?
Well, obviously, it's a very sad situation that we even have this war. It's a completely worthless war, and it's accomplishing nothing for either side. And obviously, Russia was the one who, you know, promulgated the war, and they're the ones to be blamed. Ukraine's only defending their freedom. But they're just bashing each other's heads in over, you know, Bakhmut, one little town, and barely doing much of anything else. They're destroying all their ammunition, and they're destroying all their men and women who are fighting on the front lines, and, you know, maybe nobody knows for sure how many have been killed, but it's certainly north of 100,000 across both sides, maybe north of 200,000. So it's a terrible, horrible thing that is achieving nothing for anybody. So we hope it goes away. And from a financial markets perspective, obviously it initially had an impact last year when it first hit because of the concerns about oil prices and grains and all that kind of stuff. But all that has been dealt with by the wonderful free market that, has always been flexible and able to adjust to it. So there really isn't much of a financial markets impact, up to this point in time. The one concern I have is that, you know, Russia running out of ammunition maybe decides that they need to use some of their tactical nuclear weapons or something like that in the Ukraine in order to, you know, get the thing moving in their direction. I think that would get everybody's attention if they did that, including the financial markets. So that's something to be aware of.
Well, I guess I have to ask this question in kind of closing. I guess with China, you talked about China earlier. Taiwan, is there a, you know, there is a prospect of a war in Taiwan. How do you think the financial markets are going to react to that?
Well, it has to be a negative if there was. First of all, let me say, I think it would be a surprise to some degree if China attacked Taiwan right at this moment. They're not ready to do so. They would still suffer from the many sanctions that the U.S. would throw on them, and they'd suffer more than Russia would because they actually do a lot of global business, right? So that's one of the reasons why China is leading this effort to de-dollarize and get everybody away from the U.S. dollar so they can trade with them without having to access U.S. dollars because they are preparing to attack Taiwan. But until that process is done, which is going to be a long time, they really probably, you know, would be somewhat suicidal for them to do so. So that's one big problem. Then one reason for China, a big problem for China, and one reason why they probably wouldn't act right now. They'll keep the bellicose threatening stuff up, but they probably won't actually act. And there's military reasons why they're not ready as well. But secondly, if they did, if we're wrong about that, which of course we could be, and it could be just an emotional decision rather than a rational decision by the leader of China to attack, roughly 80% of the semiconductors are produced in Taiwan, and that would put a grinding stop to all economies around the world. It would be a real problem if all of a sudden you couldn't access that semiconductor facilities. And the U.S., I read somewhere where the U.S. has said if China does successfully attack Taiwan, that we would bomb those factories because we wouldn't want the Chinese to be able to get those semiconductors. If we can't get them, they can't have them, right? So, you know, interesting situation there. I don't think we're going to have to face an invasion of Taiwan just yet, but, you know, crazier things have happened. It would be a very big negative for the financial markets, particularly since the tech sectors dominate the U.S. financial markets. They would be the first ones hit. And then you think about Apple. which is the biggest stock. It's over 7% of the S&P 500 in one stock in Apple. That, you know, they have so much of their productions coming out of China. You got to wonder how much they're trying, you know, rapidly to switch to India and other places, but they can't move it that fast. And that one stock, which affects the whole market, could really be negatively impacted by any kind of move that China would make on Taiwan.
Yeah, that's a huge, huge statement. Well, you've given us a tremendous amount of information to think about and ponder. You've answered some questions that I know a lot of our listeners have. And Rusty, it's always a pleasure, sir. You bring so much wealth of knowledge and you guide us through some mindsets. Thank you, sir, for your time. And we'll have it back on. I've got more questions. I don't have to run out of time. And that's always the case because you've always got so much for us. But thank you, sir. You have a wonderful day. We so much appreciate you. Again, Rusty Leonard, he is the CFO and CEO and founder of Stewardship Partners Investment Council. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you very much.
Yep, thank you.
Rusty has always done a great job for us. And just remind you, he mentioned the S&P 500 and a couple of stocks. The S&P 500 is an unmanaged index of 500 large cap stocks, and investors cannot invest in an index. And of course, we were not recommending any stock as he's talking through that. He's just using those as examples and just want to remind you of that. Let me turn to our guest today. I've got, I can see Scott, I can see Jason, and I can see Jacob. They're all in the studio with us. And Scott, I want to just jump in with you. The question that came in that we really wanted, and he kind of answered it a little bit, mm-hmm. is the dollar really possibly going to be replaced? And I mean, he kind of threw a pretty cold blanket on that pretty quick. What's your take?
I agree with everything Rusty said. And, you know, this is something that has been predicted for and it kind of comes and goes. It ebbs and flows in popularity, but the demise of the dollar has been predicted a lot. I think what we were talking earlier about the Mark Twain quote,
right,
rumors of my demise are
extremely
exaggerated. But it's kind of the same way with the dollar, and I agree with, you know, with it being such a large portion of global reserves. I think he used 59%. He said the same thing I always say. Okay, replace it with
China.
What?
Yeah.
So it's there. I don't see a good alternative to that now. Now, is it possible in the future at some point we use a different? Of course it is. And you look back throughout history of, you know, the British pound and other currencies that were world reserve currencies at one time. So, sure, it's possible. But I think, like he said, long way away for something like that could be replaced.
So we should take that kind of off the table, even though it's making headlines. Of course, it tied in somewhat to the debt ceiling.
Right.
And the impasse that we have with that. And this is the opportune time. So your take on the debt ceiling?
Well, I think we'll raise the debt ceiling like we always do because we have to. We have to raise the ceiling to keep it going. And that's, we do have a debt issue that will have to be addressed someday. I don't think it's necessarily today, but you can't keep going further and further in debt. But I would, again, push that out and say, look around the globe and find me another country that is less indebted than we are right now. So it's not that we're the only country out there in debt, right? There's a lot of debt around the world. So you've got to look at alternatives and go, okay, we do have some debt issues that sooner or later will have to be addressed. But again, I think we'll raise the debt ceiling like we always do, and we'll keep having that debate. And by the way, that's healthy. I like the debate. I'm glad we're still having a debate about it instead of just saying we always go
right,
forward.
Exactly.
Let's at least have a conversation and see if there are other alternatives to that.
Well, again, I appreciate it. We've got some more questions, and when we come back after the break, we'll answer some of those questions. But let me introduce the second guy here. Jason Harrington is going to talk about, it's kind of that midterm thought. Now, I know it's only the first quarter, but you got to think about this. And Jason, just quickly, you're going to talk about getting financially fit because I want us to reset. First quarter's over. It's in the history books. But we haven't given up on our goals. What are you going to tell us?
Oh, we're going to talk a little bit about what happens when life doesn't happen in a perfectly straight line.
You think that's right?
Yeah,
mine's always been in a perfectly straight line. Right?
No, it doesn't happen. We have things, we have bumps, and that's pretty normal and common for especially in all things in life, but especially in your finances. We're going to talk about what you need to do to kind of reset that. You're about trying to build habits, financial habits for the long term, not for the short term. This is very similar to going to the gym for, you know, one day and expecting instant results. No, that doesn't happen. So we're going to talk a little bit about how we get back on track and how we move forward with our finances.
All right, good. You know, going to talk about getting financially fit, resetting the computer, resetting your whole goal program. You don't want to miss that. If you got a question for us, always send it to Jim, J-I-M, at 901-683-0989 or to talkmoney@shoemakerfinancial.com. And if you want to find the show, you missed part of the show, Talk Money, or, you know, find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. Search for Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker. Subscribe to the program. We so much appreciate it. We'll be back in just a second. Jason Harrington, getting financially fit. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
This material represents an assessment of the market environment at a specific point in time and is not intended to be a forecast of future events or a guarantee of future results. This information is not investment advice or recommendation. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investments will fluctuate and when redeemed may be worth more or less than when originally invested. Financial professionals do not provide specific tax or legal advice, and this information should not be considered as such. You should always consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your own specific tax or legal situation.
Helping you make the most of your money. Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.
Neither Shoemaker Financial nor Securian Financial Services are affiliated with Rusty Leonard or Stewardship Partners. The views and opinions expressed are those of Rusty Leonard only and have not been presented on behalf of or endorsed by Securian Financial Services, Inc. or Shoemaker Financial. The NASDAQ 100 Index is a large cap growth index and includes 100 of the largest domestic and international non-financial companies based on market capitalization.
Helping you make the most of your money. It's time for Talk Money. Now, your host, Jim Shoemaker.
Welcome back. I'm talking with Jason Harrington. I want to remind you, coming up, we're going to be diving into one of those big questions that you've got. And Jason's going to help us reset our financial goals and plans and just a whole strategy that we work toward. But the reality is, Jacob Norman's going to answer one of your questions about long-term care, and Scott's going to join into that because long-term care is a part of everybody's long-term financial strategy. It's either you've done something about it or you wish you have done something about it. He's going to give us some statistics to help us look at some real, real life things that are going on, but what to do, what we should be thinking about, how much should we purchase, do we need to purchase things? But before we get to that, Jason Harrington, of course, is somebody that's on the program a lot. He's the managing director and a financial advisor at Shoemaker Financial, does a fabulous job. And Jason, I know when you're talking with clients, you've helped them put together a strategy. They're beginning to go through it. And you know you have to come back and work with them and reset. It's just nature. You literally said the lifeline is not straight up and down. I mean, straight, it's up and down and all over the place. That's reality. And so help us understand when you say getting reset. Where do I start doing that?
You know, I think one of the best things that you can do is just take a look at what you initially set out to accomplish. You know, we talked about this at the beginning of the year on the radio show, setting New Year's resolutions and setting new objectives and goals for the year. What did you originally say that you wanted to accomplish? And then take a look at today, are you on track or off track? Because you're really on track or off track for one of two reasons. One, that really probably wasn't a compelling enough objective for you to stay on track. You weren't that committed or interested in that goal. It felt good in January, but over the course of time, that's really not your goal. So now's a good time to say, okay, that happens. Life changes. New experiences happen and your goals change. And so if they have changed, then let's sit down and let's discuss what are you absolutely committed to. The other reason you may be off is simply what we said earlier, life.
Life happens.
Life happens. And it doesn't, generally speaking, life never really taps you on the shoulder and asks for permission to create an interruption. It doesn't ask you if it's okay for your pipes to bust when we had this ice storm here in Memphis not too long. It doesn't ask permission. It just does it. And so that's normal, and it shouldn't be something that gets you discouraged. It's just about handling the situation, coming back, refocusing and saying, are these really our goals? If they are really your goals, then it makes decision-making easier. It makes sacrifice easier moving forward.
You know, Scott, you talk about this a lot, and what I hear him saying, you refer to it as knowing the why.
The why, yeah.
Yeah, what, to explain that.
Well, it's kind of going back to his point of having that compelling objective. It's sitting down and really, really spending some time figuring out what you want to accomplish. I always say, are we spending our money in a way that is improving our life, or said another way, are we spending our money in a way that aligns with our goals and responsibilities? Well, first you have to sit down and really spend some time figuring out what those goals and what those responsibilities are, and know what you're trying to accomplish. Because going back to, you know, an important part of any strategy is that course correction, and there's all kind of things that cause that, but also just the sheer amount of messages and everything that are coming at you today that are going to try to change those goals for you, even though you might not see it happening. You know, we call that marketing or advertising, and there's companies out there and with well intentions. I'm not putting any kind of negative spin on that. I'm just saying, if you don't have a plan and know where you want your money to go, somebody's liable to decide that for you, whether you even know it or not.
Jacob, you had something to say?
Yeah, I did. The what I see most common in the frame of the reset is the prioritization of things. And a lot of times the conversations that begin that I have people coming into the office is they want to talk about college planning with their kids. That's where they want to get financially fit. And when we really boil in, they're behind the eight ball in their own personal retirement.
Mm.
And so the prioritization, in my opinion, is wrong. They've got the focuses in all the wrong areas. They want to do the best things for their children because they're good parents. But we got to analyze the cost. And so my favorite question to ask parents, especially young parents in that scenario, is what do you think is the larger expense? Potential student loans for an undergraduate degree for a student, or are you running out of money at some point later on down the road? And it's a really compelling thought. You can see a change in their face whenever they answer that question. And it's a reprioritization of what's the important goal. Where should I be allocating my resources?
Yeah, so you have alternatives for college, but no real alternative for stopping work.
And right. So that's a great point. So what you're really doing here is when the reset, you're going back and, you know, everybody kind of set goals. They took stock of what they've got. They gathered all their assets. They look at their budget. They get all that. That's kind of the easy part. Now you're doing the living of the strategy. You're walking through it. You're defining it. So at this point, how do you help somebody know when to change strategies or when to make a change? I mean, just when they walk into your office and they say, okay, I'm struggling or I'm having this problem here, how do you direct that? Because it's like we're all of a sudden, we're counselors, we're mediators, you know, and that's kind of what we're trying to help them get through, is making that decision. So give me an idea.
Yeah, I think Scott brings up a good point. I think one of the things you got to start with from an advisor's perspective is talking to your client and making sure that some of this deviation from plan isn't just an emotional moment, an emotional thing happening right now. You know, we have stimulus coming in and we have situations and we have things that happen with family and kids and work that can get us a little distracted from a long-term objective. I think the first thing we got to do is say, is this a momentary distraction, a momentary bump? Are you really having a fundamental change in your belief and where you want to go long term? And that's just through some conversation and asking what's going on and just really getting to know your client and understanding them at a level that's much deeper than their checkbook. And it's a little more on a relationship standpoint and a friendship and understanding what's going on in their life. And so I think if our listeners are out there and their advisor is asking them those kind of questions that are deeper, lean into that a little bit. Allow the advisor to do that and to get to know you a little better and get to know them a little better so that they can help understand if this is an emotional moment or if this is a real fundamental change in their goals.
You know, when you say emotional moment, Scott, we talk about this a lot because news media, the mainstream media, can create all kinds. We talked about that. Rusty did a fabulous job of giving us an economic overview, and some of it was alarming. I mean, face it, the banking right. crisis, all of a sudden the real estate crisis. We can get caught up, the dollar becoming, losing its status as the cash reserve for the world. I mean, those are things that, whether we like it or not, they're real. They're on the headlines. Maybe they're not as big as the headline wants to make it, but it's an emotion. You're talking about, I mean, Jason just is really managing that, but you're talking about those emotions.
And those emotions can certainly derail a long-term strategy, right? If you get caught up in a lot of that, and let's say you have a good strategy in place for hitting, you know, whether it's educating kids or hitting that retirement goal, and all of a sudden you hear all this stuff in the media, whether it's the dollar's going away or you know, the China and Taiwan controversy or potential political event or military event there. All those things can really cause those emotions to well up inside and get fearful. And getting fearful can cause you to make bad decisions for your long-term strategy. So, you know, we always tell people don't get emotional, and that's just absolutely impossible. It's easy to say, but you can't not get emotional. The thing to do is anticipate those emotions and know what you're going to do on the front end, and don't make any knee-jerk reactions that could derail your long-term strategy.
I appreciate that. We're talking, of course, we've got Jacob Norman here with us, Jason Harrington, and Scott Jordan. We're going through the process of resetting goals that, you know, the why that you set out in January to say, I want to have a financial strategy. If you didn't do that, you should. And it's never too late to start. You're never too old to start. You're never too young to start. Bottom line is, it's just a part of managing, being a steward of what you've been entrusted with. And so very important, a lot of things to do. But, you know, Jason, I want to lean in. At the end of the day, there's a kind of this bottom line mentality. People have made resolutions and they're having to reset. What do you say to them when it comes to those, that first thought or second thought of bottom line?
Well, the goal or the resolution or articulating that out loud, you know, feels good. It's fun. That's when a lot of the energy is there, when you're making those statements. But accomplishing those goals are way much more, encouraging and exciting than just saying them out loud. Saying them is one thing, but actually getting to see the fruits of those, that effort is even better. So that's what we're trying to do when we're working with clients. So we're not trying to get this done in a one quarter. We're trying to build lifelong habits that allow them to navigate these emotions, that allow them to navigate whatever market they're in. If they understand their why, as Scott mentioned earlier, and they're clear with what they want to accomplish, then our job is to help them establish the habits that over time, to be bullish with your goals, to understand that if I continue to do and take these right actionable moments, at the end of doing the right thing is you accomplishing your goal.
Well, you know, whether you're Tyler Springs, the producer's age, you know, young, and think about, we said never too late, and it's always that possibility, stay the course and do that. Or you're my age, it's, you know, which is just a few years older than he is. And
that's right.
You know, from that standpoint, we've enough said, guys, that's enough. So the point is,
I actually thought he was older, but.
Well, yeah, right. But the reality is, when you think about it, don't get discouraged. I mean, that's so critical. Keep your emotions out and just stay the course. And that can be difficult, but that's where you guys come in the guidance of some wise counselor. You mentioned if you've got a counselor that you can have the dialogue with and you can work with, great. But if you don't, you need that, because trying to do this solo by yourself can be extremely difficult.
It can. You need a sounding board. You need to be able to talk through those moments. As Scott mentioned earlier, emotions, you can't avoid them. I mean, if you look at many surveys, money, financial security, retirement, stopping work, all of those things generally land on your top 1, 2, 3, 4 worry chart with any survey that ever happens. Same thing with resolutions. That's always one of the top things. Just you ask a million people out there, do they want to be financially secure and financially fit? A million people are going to say yes.
There's one.
There may always be one. But most people fundamentally want to do it. But behind doing that, there's some sacrifice, there's some concern, there's worry and all of that stuff. So our job is to help them, you know, continue to talk about their why, to stay on track, to stay the course, to have that dialogue back and forth. And you need someone that you can have serve as a sounding board as you're just going through life and dealing with your money.
Well, just we're reminding people, we talk about planning on the radio a lot. We talk about sharing with you, keeping your emotions. Don't get discouraged. The reality is you started a plan in January. This is a reset time. It's the second quarter. You're kind of moving through this process. Don't quit. Don't stop. Keep going where you are. Jason, you've done a fabulous job of helping us go through and think about restarting, the whole idea of rebooting, if you
that's
want
right.
to use that
it's
term.
A little Control-Alt-Delete sometimes.
Yeah,
you got to do that.
Yeah, you got to redo that. And that's a great way of looking at it. So well said. But, Scott, you talked about your why. That is so important. But I do want to answer a question that one of our listeners has sent in and said, hey, I want to know about long-term care. And Jacob Norman is going to really dive into that subject for us. And Jacob, there is so much information about long-term care that I want to just kind of help you understand and help people understand. There's this thought process of this enormous amount of services that long-term care provides, and it's not provided by your medical insurance. Help us understand, what is long-term care insurance?
It's the shortfall. I mean, it's everything from the people coming into the home to be a caregiver. That way you're not having to rely on a family member to out-of-home care, whether it be a nursing home or a nicer facility. It's the ability to choose how you live your late years of life when you need some help.
You know, that is such a subject because so many people talk about it. University of Chicago interviewed about 1,100 people back in March of 2021. And there's some statistics. I just want to share with them. I know you know them. 69% of older Americans have done little or no planning. Almost 70% no planning. That's
no surprise.
It just blew me away, though. I was surprised.
It's a really sad statistic, and I think it piggybacks directly off the conversation you just had with Jason. I mean, it's directly involved. Too many people, I find, are just kind of flying by the seat of their pants, and then all of a sudden they reach a moment, and they have to make a decision, and they're having to make a best case of a certain scenario. They don't have the flexibility or the ability to do what they choose.
I know, Scott, you and I have a lot of times when we have people around the table, siblings, and they're talking about mom and dad, and that statistic really plays out what he says, and sometimes it can cause an enormous amount of anxiety around the table.
It's being a caregiver is a very stressful situation to be put in. Whether it's a spouse you're caring for or an elderly parent that you're having to take care for, that puts a lot of pressure on the caregiver, and we've seen that in so many different situations. Now, looking at these statistics, I'm not surprised either. I think for people, it's hard for them to envision themselves needing the type of care that long-term care would provide. I think it's kind of one of those situations you don't want to picture yourself in, so it's kind of, I'm just in denial. I don't want to think about that.
The U.S. Department of Health and Human Services put out a statistic, and I know, Jacob, you shared this with me. 70% of Americans who reach age 65 will need some long-term care during their remaining years. That's a statistic that ought to wake up what he was just talking about. People think it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen to me. It may happen to the guy next door. But 70% of Americans who reach 65 will have some need, in the remaining of their years, some type of long-term care need. And that's not something we dreamed up. That's the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. What's your take on that, Jacob?
My favorite saying as of late has been dying is a horrible retirement plan. But I feel like that's a common response, especially more so in men that I find it's like, oh, I'm just going to die. I won't live this long. And it's like, well, what are you going to do if you do?
Right.
I mean, that's not a good option because I don't feel like you're going to just decide at 73. Okay, I'm running out of money. We're done here. And so you have this scenario where you have your children who are trying to do the best that they can to feed their own children, put them through college, do cool things. And then they're having to put their life on hold for 2, 3, 5 years to make sure that you get the care you didn't just due to improper planning. And it's sad. It's irresponsible. But people are just kind of winging it. I don't think anybody's waking up in the morning going, I'm going to make bad financial decisions today. But it's on the back burner because they don't extend their bandwidth to even put any thought into it.
You know, I think it's important for me to say this at this point, because I think whether you need help looking at your long-term care or you literally want to reset and you need some guidance there, you can talk to these guys by simply giving them a call at 757-5757, area code 901-757-5757. And you know, the point I'm trying to make with this, sometimes you're doing a great job. You just want somebody to check it out. These guys can help you do that, give you some insight. Long-term care is such a question. And what we're finding out, the question simply was, do I need long-term care for myself or do I need to help parents? I mean, they were literally looking at both sides. And so I appreciate the question and I understand the question. So here's the thought. When should, because this guy apparently was younger, he didn't give me his age, when should someone like that, he's talking about himself and parents, now it had to be elderly parents, when should a person buy long-term care?
Now is the quick response to that. Most people would say 50 to 60 is a good time to start considering it. There's options out there that are different than your standard long-term care that we've come to know. Actually, that style of long-term care is going away. For many reasons.
Now, you're talking about the style. You're talking about where you're paying
the premium. If you don't use it, you lose it. That traditional style of long-term care, it's going away for a couple of different reasons. One is getting very, very expensive. And then two, from the insurance, from what I understand, the actuaries have a really hard time with it as well. So their insurance companies are trying to move away from it as well. So they're really shifting that over into a different type of insurance vehicle. One, you could access at a very young age. I'm 35 years old. I could go out and I could purchase a life insurance policy that has long-term care provisions built within it. But if you're in your 50s and 60s, there's absolutely some options that have a different style of underwriting. They're not necessarily underwriting for your mortality so much as your morbidity. How long are you going to live while sick? And so don't take it as long-term care is expensive. I can't afford this. I don't need to pursue it. That's just not true. You need to go and at least test your options out.
Well, I think what you're saying to us is don't just make one quick choice. Seek some counsel. That's what I appreciate from that standpoint. So literally making this whole process of understanding long-term care, it's not easy, but it's something that we can all do. Do we all agree with that, that you just have to go through the process?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think that sitting down and looking at the, you know, Jacob mentioned several different ways to address the issue. You know, when you're talking about long-term care, it's about, okay, if I need it, how am I going to pay for it? And it's looking at each person's situation and going, well, I can either say I'm just going to self-insure this risk, or I'm going to transfer that risk off to an insurance company or figure out some other technique that I'm going to try to address this. But that's part of sitting down and really going over your whole financial situation, looking at those whys. What are we trying to do? What are those things that can get in the way of our goals, like long-term care, early death, and things like that? And how do we address these issues? So I think it's not a one-size-fits-all answer.
I think one of the things we were talking about earlier with regard to this, and I'm starting to get some experience with it with my own parents, is that we think about long-term care as protecting the person who's going to go into a long-term care facility or need some long-term care assistance. But long-term care does a tremendous amount to protect the caregiver as well, and not put the burden of care. And I say burden, but you know, they want to do it because they love the person, but it can be very taxing and start to affect the health of not only the person who's going into the long-term care facility, but also the caregiver as well. And long-term care insurance can help you, or some long-term care provision can help protect the caregiver as well.
Just reminding you that 70% of Americans who reach age 65 will need some long-term care during their remaining years. Jacob, you've done a great job with this subject. That's a statement from the United States Department of Health and Human Services. I appreciate you providing that. I just think, guys, this is an important subject. We've had a great conversation, but I just have to say, we've just finished taxes, okay? Tax planning is over. You know, I've finished mine, got my payments to taxes. I got to read you this, though. This is something that comes from MarketWatch, December 20th, 2021. It's called the IRS Publication 17. Now, listen to me. This is no joke. Now, this is real. Income from illegal activities, such as money from dealing illegal drugs, must be included in your income.
It's about time.
I think that makes sense.
About time.
I
mean,
it says, similarly, if you steal property, you must report its fair market value in your income in the year you steal it, unless you return it to the rightful owner in the same year.
So do you have to report, like, usage value? Like, if I used it for, like, 6 months, and do I have to report that?
I don't have a clue.
How specific do you have to be on what illegal activity?
Yeah,
can you
just say, is it just,
It's just, reading publication 17. Something.
I just find it quite comical that we're going to assume that the person who stole something is going to have the ethical, you know, fortitude to report it on their taxes.
Honesty among thieves.
Okay, I'm on the canon here. You guys, it's just, I just read it from Market Watch. I love it. Thanks, guys. I want to thank you guys. You did a great job. Jason Harrington, Jacob Norman, Scott Jordan, and Rusty Leonard. If you have questions for these guys, you can call them at 901-757-5757. Please do that. Tremendous amount of information. Of course, you know, if you have questions, type them to Jim, J-I-M, on the text line, 901-683-0989. Next week, my guest, Steve Anderson, Drew Johnson, and again, Scott Jordan will be back as always. That's Saturday morning at 7 a.m. and Sunday at 9 a.m. I want to thank my producer, Tyler Springs, guest and content coordination, Francis Fortner, production, of course, marketing assistant, Lauren Norsworthy, and the compliance officer, Tommy Armstrong. Thanks so much for listening. We're here for you each and every week, helping you make the most of your money. I'm Jim Shoemaker. This is Talk Money.
Jim Shoemaker, Jason Harrington, Scott Jordan, and Jacob Norman are registered representatives and investment advisor representatives of Securian Financial Services, Inc., Securities Dealer, Member FINRA, SIPC, a registered investment advisor. Shoemaker Financial is independently owned and operated.
Helping you make the most of your money. This has been Talk Money with Jim Shoemaker on News Talk 98.9.